Hey, podcasters, we have a lot. We kind of actually begin and end with the American dream on our podcast today. What is the American dream? Because I don't hear any politicians talking about it. The Democratic voter concerns, according to Politico, I don't think those are actual concerns of actual people. And we kind of go through that. We talk to the podcaster for Red Pilled America that talks about saving American jobs, and we kind of go into this just a little bit and bring the whole conversation around with the Biden polls. There is a thirst in the Democratic Party for something other than socialism. Also, Joe Biden, we talked to Pat about what happened with Joe Biden in China and in Ukraine, and some really great stats from last night's TV show that if you haven't watched it, you have to. We gave you a little bit of Cory Booker and what Cory Booker has done as mayor and senator. You're going to love that. And my favorite, AOC being confused by the garbage disposal. Don't want to miss this.
Do you want to subscribe, though, and watch not only today's program, if you would like, but also the Cory Booker expose that we mentioned? You can watch all that, the entire thing, on blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and support conservative voices. Make sure everyone's getting pulled off of all this social media stuff. We need a place for conservatives to be able to congregate and to get the message out. blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn.
And now, on with the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Our sponsor this half hour is Home Title Lock. Imagine being evicted from your own home for not paying a home equity loan that you never took out. That's what happens. It happened to a Portland couple. You could be the next victim. The crime is called home title fraud. Home title fraud is something that I didn't even know existed. We keep home titles and mortgages online now, and that's where criminals hunt them. They forge your name. They take you off your home's title. They borrow money using your home as collateral. You don't even know it until you get usually an eviction notice because you haven't made the payments. You're like, I didn't even take anything out. Identity theft programs, banks, insurance, they do not protect you. For pennies a day, Home Title Lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title and mortgage. Home Title Lock. Get a free title scan and a report. It's $100 value. It's free with sign up. And just to make sure that this hasn't happened to you, this is something that you need. This is something that your parents need. Get Home Title Lock before it's too late. HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. All right. You know, my day starts the same way. My day usually starts focused on what it should be focused on. And I don't think we're all that different. I think our days start exactly the same. This morning, my alarm went off about 5 o'clock. And every morning I just get up, drag myself out of bed, and I get showered. And then I stand for about 5 minutes in my closet just trying to find anything that still fits. I mean, I got a whole closet full of clothes, nothing I can really still wear. Today, I'm going to start exercising, I tell myself. I listen to a podcast. I try to get a quick update on the insanity that happened on the other side of the world where the sun is now setting before we begin our insanity. I peek into my bedroom where at least one of the kids are now fast asleep. They climbed into bed with us last night because of the thunder showers. And I wonder if he or she is going to be rested enough now to ace that test that we studied for last night. I just want them to do well in life, but I don't even know how to help them anymore. The nonsense taught in their school shocks me almost every time, and I don't even know why anymore. 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4. There is no gender. And I don't even recognize the country that people are describing when they talk about America. And I care. I do. I'm not a hater. I don't want to burn the whole system down. I don't want to spread fake news, but I don't even know what's true anymore. Everything my parents taught me now seems out of fashion. I worry about the economy. I worry about my job. I worry about other people's job. I worry about illegal immigration. And I'm not stupid, and I'm not racist. I don't want kids in cages. I'm proud of our history of Ellis Island, but I want to know who's here. My family came here for the same reasons. They just wanted a chance. And that's all I want. That's all I want for my children. And I'm tired of the political bickering. I think me and my friends, we could fix this just by leaving people alone and recognizing that we're all the same. We just want a shot. Isn't that the American dream? It's not two cars. It's just having a shot. And are our kids going to have that shot? And I don't see a politician talking about this. Because I mean it. I think we could get together with our neighbors and fix this. What does no genders have to do with fixing our country so our children have a shot? They're now talking about getting rid of capitalism openly. Forget about socialism. That was so 2016. They're actually now talking about, I don't want to be like Sweden. They're now actually stating the free market's end. They're now saying they want to abolish capitalism. You know why they didn't want to stand by that stupid green jobs deal? Because if you read what was in there, it says the fundamental transformation of our financial system from a free market to a system of environmental and economic justice. That's what we're talking about. Yesterday, I saw this article in Politico, and here's the headline. Here's where the Democrat candidates stand on the biggest issues of 2020. And let me ask you, mom, dad, college student, are any of these the biggest issues in your life? Supreme Court expansion, basically packing the courts. Is that something that you sit around with your friends, and when you're really talking heart to heart about the country, do you really sit around and go, you know what? You know what would fix this country? We got to do this right away. Pack the Supreme Court. Make that more political. You know what would really fix this country? The thing I'm most worried about? Legalizing marijuana. That's number two. Number three, abolishing the Electoral College. You know, let me go through all of these things and let me tell you what they're really about. Supreme Court expansion. What is their goal? Is their goal really about helping you in your job, helping you keep more of your money, giving your kids a shot? Are they helping you raise your kids when you talk about Supreme Court expansion? No. No, that's about a fundamental transformation of America. That's what that is. Legalizing marijuana. Okay, maybe I'll be kind and say that has something to do with prison reform. And I'm okay with that. I'm a libertarian. I'm fine. Legalize drugs. I'm fine with that. But is that what most people are talking about in their life? Abolishing the Electoral College. What's that all about? Fundamental transformation of the United States. And it's about power. The Electoral College is there to keep us balanced, to make sure that the big cities don't dominate the rest of the country. You may not like the way the election, you know, bears out, but the founders did it for a reason. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. And a democracy is always number one or number two on any socialist or communist list of how to flip a nation. Because then it becomes mob rule. When did we become these people where we were like, hey, 51% of us say it's this way, so shut your pie hole. We've always hated that. We're a country for the underdog. This is why the left is so screwed up right now. They think we're against gay people. I'm not against gay people. I feel bad when people have lived their whole life feeling one way and afraid to come out and say it. This is about bullies. And America has always been on the side of underdogs. But you know, when you get enough underdogs together and they're led by a few bullies, they're not the underdog anymore. Universal health care. They told you that they would give you $2,500 per family per year. That's how much your savings would be. $2,500 per year. Did you see the $2,500 in coming back to you? Did you see that reduction in your health care cost? Because my health care costs have gone through the roof. Everyone's health care costs have gone through the roof. This didn't do what they said. You trusted them. They promised you. They even lied about keeping your doctor. They lied about it, admitted to it later. They lied. And now they want to do more? Well, why did they lie in the first place? Because this isn't about healthcare. This isn't about you. This is about controlling that part of the economy. This is about them having more power over you. It's about getting rid of the free market, one sector at a time. Taxing the rich. It's nice, but whenever you say, hey, how much is a fair share? And people actually hear how much people are paying in taxes. They're outraged by it. How much is your fair share? Let me ask you this. When it comes to reparations, how many people in your life, this is on Politico's top Democratic candidates, where they stand on the biggest issues in 2020, is reparations really the biggest issue that we're facing right now? Where is just being decent to each other? Reparations? Reparations is about changing everything. It's about punishing people. Is anybody else sick and tired of punishing people or being punished? Banishing people or being banished? I am. I don't want to be other people's judges. I'm tired of it. Free college. That's like healthcare. First of all, can't be done. Oh, it'll save everybody. No, it won't. It will drive the cost of college through the roof, but you won't notice it because you'll be paying taxes for it. This is about the government controlling all education. This is about the government controlling your children and your children's chance just to have a shot. Rejecting super PACs, is that really on your priority list, America? Because that's about political change. Late-term abortions. This one's not even about people. This is about getting us to disregard people. How many people do you know that are for late-term abortions? And I'm talking to the Democrats. How many do you know that are for, you know, letting the child die after birth? Killing the child the night before he or she could be born. Is that your biggest priority? Is that how you see fixing America? The new Green Deal. What's that one about? Well, read the bill. I love it when people say, read the bill. This one's pretty easy. You can read it. It talks about the fundamental transformation of the economic system of America from a free market capitalist society to one of environmental and social justice. That's about their control. Eliminating the filibuster is the last one on the list of the top priorities, the biggest priorities. Ending the filibuster? Again, it's about changing the system for control. We all have bigger things to worry about. And I think this is why Donald Trump will do well again. And it's why Joe Biden is doing well, because Joe Biden is not seen, even though he is part of this. He'll do all of these things. He's not out talking about it all the time. And so Lunch Bucket Joe, who is anything but Lunch Bucket Joe, is doing well in the polls because everyone else seems so radical.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast.
It's amazing to see, because you're talking about the priorities and if the politicians are actually addressing them. And so often, the answer to that is just no.
No.
Right? I mean, the Green New Deal is the perfect example of this. Now, as you point out, when you read the Green New Deal, you find out it's not at all about really anything green. It's more of a green is the new red deal, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to hide all of the policies they've been trying to pass for mm-hmm. a million years mm-hmm. under the sort of pretense of the environment. But that's not really what it's about. When you look at climate change and you want to look at the priorities for the American people, we see the same thing over and over and over again. This is the list of the priorities. Number one, the economy. Again, the economy, it's the economy, stupid, is this thing that is supposed to be true. If it's true, Donald Trump's not going to have a problem getting reelected.
Yeah, the first three are really the economy.
Yep.
When you talk about things that people are worried about, these are the things that concern me every single day.
Mm-hmm.
The economy. Mm-hmm. What is ahead? Number two, what about health care? What are they going to do to health care?
And it's specifically healthcare costs.
Yes.
So again, and that is very related to the economy. People just want to make sure that they can pay for their healthcare.
I just want to be able to take my kid to the doctor if they need something. That's all I worry about. And what are they going to do to it now? And is it going to make it better or worse? Listen to that. What are they going to do to my healthcare? With a complete disregard of the free market. Healthcare is getting better, but it's getting more expensive. Why? Because they're tinkering with it. Education. They've driven up the cost of education to unbelievable sums of money. And it's all because the United States government started guaranteeing loans. Well, that way everyone can go to college. Well, not everyone should go to college. Some should go to trade schools.
And also, it's not guaranteeing everybody goes to college. It is instead really subsidizing.
It's making sure everybody goes in debt.
Yes, and it's subsidizing people who are more well off, who tend to go to college more often, with money that is coming from the entire tax base. So again, it's almost a reverse of what the left says they want. And they're guaranteeing these loans. So of course, colleges... and universities who aren't, you know, they're not morons here. They just keep hiking the prices knowing that everyone has to pay them. Because, well, I mean, if the prices get too high, either the government comes in and bails everybody out, which they've done before, or they come in and they say, well, we'll change the program to make the loan more affordable. So more money goes to the college and less money goes to interest. But what does that mean to the average person? Nothing. They're still paying it. And the principal's higher. So then they kind of wind up, this just keeps churning and churning and churning, and prices go up and up and up. And in the result is that college costs have outpaced with inflation almost every other part of our society.
And you are going to college to be indoctrinated. Never has it been more true to say Woodrow Wilson's dream of college education has finally happened. His dream of a college education was to make a man or a boy more unlike his father as possible. So to try to change him so he doesn't reflect his father or his father's value at all. They're doing that. Is that what you want? So the first three, economy, healthcare costs, and education, all things all of us worry about. But I want to go down this list and show you, I don't think I have ever seen a party more out of step with the items on the list of what people actually care about and how they rank them ever before in any election. If the economy stays as solid as it is right now, Donald Trump has a big win in front of him.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Man, I'm so excited. Can you feel the anticipation? It's beginning. I'm feeling it.
I am Spartacus.
When he said that, it was magical.
I am Spartacus.
Oh my gosh, yes you are. I mean, not in any way, shape, or form, but yes, I see you saying that you're Spartacus. The magic of Cory Booker really just kind of comes from him looking for the moment where he can look into the camera and say, I'm some sort of superhero. John Stewart actually introduced Booker once as the superhero mayor of Newark. I will tell you that I am trying to buy Cory Booker's cape right now because I think it needs a special place in our Museum of American History, because superhero is really what he is. And if he was a superhero, his name would be Stuntman. Earlier this year, the Washington Post called Booker perhaps the true first social media influencer in politics. Wow. Now, he's the Don King of self-promotion. He has done all kinds of stuff. First, the first thing he did when he was elected to his first position in Newark City for Newark City Council, he was 29 years old, and he went on a 10-day hunger strike. Oh my gosh, he's that magical. Yes. He slept outdoors in a tent to draw attention to Cory drug dealing. That's what he was trying to do. 4 million Twitter followers later, Stuntman has stayed busy. Now, he was the mayor of Newark, and when he was the mayor of Newark, he lived on food stamps for a week. He helped shovel an elderly man's driveway, and he rescued a freezing dog. In one of his most viral stunts, he responded to a Newark mother who said on Twitter that she was snowed in and running out of diapers. Now, this is a very touching story. Okay, here's this mom. She's run out of diapers. She's snowed in. The mayor comes to deliver Pampers? Oh, my gosh. This guy is such a superhero.
It's Stuntman to the rescue.
He went to her house, appeared on her doorstep with arms full of Pampers. And since that moment, a star was born. He first ran for mayor of Newark in 2002, but he lost to a guy who's been around for a long time. And the campaign, of course, was captured in an Oscar-nominated documentary titled Street Fight. 4 years later, he ran for mayor and again won. Now, I know everybody was thinking, well, that means Newark, New Jersey was rescued by Stuntman. Well, no. In 2014, after he became a U.S. senator, Booker told The Atlantic, I want to deal with facts. In God we trust, but I'm a man, and I'm a man of faith, but everybody else has to bring me data. So let's bring Stuntman his data and report on his time as mayor of Newark. One of his first acts as mayor was to pass an 8.3 tax increase. Yes, 8.3% income tax on property taxes and a new tax on rental cars. And I got to tell you, if I had property in Newark, New Jersey, I would be thinking, now my city's fixed. He's just raised my taxes. Thank you, superhero stuntman. During his last 3 years of mayor, taxes rose 20% on residents. Yeah. He wants to be your president. That could happen to you.
The good thing is, though, people in Newark are just so flush with money. They don't care about the tax increases. They don't even notice it. It's basically like you're in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Yeah. Now, there was a 20% increase for taxes during his last 3 years as mayor, but they also had some shortfalls. So he, even with all that new money rolling in, he had to cut 1,100 workers from the city payroll, including 160 policemen. That's 15% of the Newark police force. But don't worry about that. I mean, there's no crime in Newark, is there?
No, yeah. Not at all. People are so wealthy. Why would they commit crimes?
School remained under state control. The city's finances were such a mess that it couldn't even borrow money to fix the water system. Oh, man. Please vote Cory Booker. New businesses came to town because of the superhero on Twitter saying all kinds of things. But during his last full year as mayor, the outer wards of the city had a curfew because of shootings and drug dealing. So I don't know about you, but I want to go do my shopping right there in the inner city where the minute it gets dark, you better be inside. I love that. The share of Newark citizens living below the poverty line rose while he was mayor, maxing out at 36%. Currently, the poverty rate in Newark still hovers around 30, but that's double the national poverty rate. When Booker left near the end of his second term to become a U.S. senator and Spartacus, he left behind a $93 million deficit. They should have just raised taxes some more. Here's what the New York Times says about Booker. His constituents do not need to be reminded that 6 years after the mayor came into office vowing to make Newark a model of urban transformation, their city remains an emblem of poverty. But don't look there. There's nothing there. I mean, he's a superhero, remember? The same year as that New York Times quote, Ellen gave Stuntman the superhero. She gave him a superhero costume after he was in the right place and time to help evacuate a woman from a burning apartment building. Wow, that is fantastic. Now, what Ellen didn't point out is that Newark had to eliminate three firefighting companies because Cory Booker didn't know how to work on a budget. And so they were way over budget, and so they had to cut all these firemen. And so Cory Booker... the right place, right time, maybe, but it's his fault that there weren't any firemen there to help people. By the middle of Booker's second term as mayor, even fellow Democrats started to complain that he was out of town too much. You know, in an 18-month period, he was only out of town 25% of the time. But, I mean, he had fixed everything, right? Now, to be fair, superheroes do give an awful lot of speeches. I know, because I watch all the Marvel movies. Stu doesn't know this. He didn't see the Marvel movies. Mm. But they're always constantly giving a speech. Blah, 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 blah. Between 2008 and getting elected to the Senate, Booker gave 96-page speeches across the country, earning $1.7 million. Now, he didn't use that to pay down the $93 million deficit. He did give some of it to charity. He gave it. He gave $620,000 to churches and nonprofits in Newark. So it's kind of superhero-ish, kind of, or what most of us would say, what you're supposed to do.
Heck of a lot more than Beto, though. I mean, that's at least.
Well, no, but Beto's giving all of his time.
0.3% of his money, but
all of his time.
All of his time.
All of his time. Now, the New York Times said a growing number of Newarkers complained that he has proved to be a better marketer than mayor, who shines in the spotlight but shows little interest in the less glamorous work of getting to do what it takes to run a city. Business leaders say he dazzles at news conferences, but he flags on follow through. And just one more thing here before we change subjects. Remember the Newark mother? The one who's like, oh, I don't have any Pampers. Old Mother Hubbard, I'm checking my cupboard and there are no Pampers to be found. Well, yeah, she was. It's true. She didn't have any Pampers. And it's true that Cory Booker showed up to deliver diapers because she was snowed in. But here's the real story of it. It's really, the story's not about Booker being a hero at all. In fact, she was snowed in because while he was mayor, the city didn't have a contract for snow plowing the streets, so no one could move. Quote, the only reason he brought me Pampers was that it had been 3 days and our street hadn't been plowed. I have 5 kids. Trust me, I don't just run out of Pampers. All we wanted for him to do was to plow our streets. It's all about knowing how to manage a city. That is Stuntman. That is Spartacus.
How do you not vote for a guy like that?
Well,
that's an impressive record.
Well, there's a couple of other things that kind of came up that we talked about last night on the TV show at 5 o'clock last night. You can find it in blazetv.com/Glenn. Sign up. You'll save 10% now. Just save $10 for your yearly subscription if you use the promo code Glenn. Last night's episode, we did another socialist spotlight. And Cory Booker was the guy. And what's weird is he's really, really socialist right now. He's like, I'm for free everything. Except there's a couple of kind of capitalist things that he's done. Some might even say crony capitalist. Kind of the thing that everybody on all sides of the aisle hate, that nobody's really picking up on. That maybe you should hear.
I will say one of my favorite parts is, like, let's say I wanted to get someone to mow my lawn every week. Mm-hmm. I would be hesitant to hire a 15-year-old to do that job. Mm-hmm. That's what I would be as a homeowner. I would just be like, I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, let me tell you, he doesn't have any problem with the Utes. Okay,
no,
the
doesn't.
Utes are fine with him. We've got a story for you next about how much he appreciates the Utes and what kind of jobs he'll give to 15-year-olds.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Patrick Carelci is the host of Red Pilled America. And Patrick, I am on record saying anybody who tells you that manufacturing jobs, I'm going to bring all those jobs back to America, either an idiot or a liar because of technological changes that are on the horizon. You did a 3-part series for Red Pilled America called American Icon. And it started exactly the same place I started years ago with just trying to find a baseball hat made in America.
Yeah, it did. Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure.
We were like everybody. We were trying to make some merch for our listeners, and we got a sample. And we got the sample back, and it was like, man, this is pretty cheap. Why is it so cheap? And we looked at the tag, and it said made in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, we can't do this. This is Red Pilled America. So we decided let's make a Made in America baseball cap, and let's kind of look at the story of American manufacturing through the creation of this baseball cap and see what it tells us. So we kind of went back to the beginning of baseball. I mean, the thing about a baseball cap, it is an American icon. I mean, it is an American creation that was made almost predominantly here in the United States for, 150 years. And then all
I never thought of that. Nobody else wears them.
I mean, we are, it is an American creation, and now it is a foreign product. And so we were kind of like, how did this happen? And so we go back to the creation of baseball, and we follow it all the way up through to today. And it was just this fascinating kind of look at how manufacturing kind of left the United States and the conditions that were kind of prevalent, the conditions that were around at the time to kind of make manufacturing flourish here. And, you know, there's, I have to say, I entered this, anyone that says that bringing back American manufacturing is going to be an easy thing that could happen easily is not saying, telling the truth. It's very complicated. It's a complicated discussion. But that said, I entered this in with a certain thought process, with my own bias and my own ideology, this kind of standard kind of conservative look of the world. And I have to say that it did change. My mind changed somewhat. And what I learned from the specialists is we have to have a completely different mindset. The only way that we bring back any of these jobs is if we completely change our mindset. I spoke to a guy that actually has a hat manufacturing company here in the United States. One of the issues that he's running into is that people don't even think about going into the manufacturing business. We've lost our shop classes in high school. There's no more shop. I mean, I remember the day when I would go to wood shop and I would, you know, people would go into sewing class. And
you know, it's crazy. Have you ever been to Facebook? Facebook on their campus, they have a giant shop class, and it is always packed. It's always packed.
Really?
People love making things with their hands. And what we forget is but when we've lost manufacturing, what you've lost more than just the ability to make things. A perfect example, Bangladesh isn't going to start by making the stealth bomber, right? They start by making towels. And then they go on to making T-shirts, and then they go on to making the baseball cap, and then they go on to making the assembling our smartphones, and then they move up from there. When you lose your base of manufacturing, you lose the ability to innovate in the future.
Yes.
Because people don't know how to work in a shop. And so, you know, it was a very interesting, you know, there's a lot of talk of tariffs now, and whether they're good and whether they're bad. And I feel like what we're using these tariffs for now is more to try to get actually get free trade, because there are these relationships that we have with foreign countries are not reciprocal. They do not they manipulate their currencies. They use slave labor in many cases. In Bangladesh, there 1,100 people died in the collapse of a building because they don't have certain kinds of building regulations there. So I think at the end of the day, you know, and we go through this story. It's a three-part series on Red Pilled America. You could see it on iHeartRadio. We really delve really deep into this entire process and come to the conclusion that we must start changing our mindset on this. We must start valuing the ability to make things again, rather than just become a service industry that feels like, okay, China is we lose on our and social on our security, we lose the ability to be able to purchase products, components for our military, because the Chinese, we can't get components without Chinese parts. So there's so many things that we lose by just pushing everything overseas besides the jobs.
I have to tell you, Patrick, I my son and I are really into old cars, and he really wants to rebuild one from ground up, and I'm like, I have no idea how to do that. No idea. But we've been looking into it, and the more we look into old cars from, you know, the turn of the century up until really after World War II, there were all of these great cars that were made all over America that were just innovative and totally different. And people would go into the car company business. Most of them failed, but they failed because the big three would put them out. But they would go in to build, you know, they'd only build 30 cars a year or 10 cars, you know, total. But there was this idea that you could do it. And now we've lost that. We've lost the idea that, yeah, my friend, you know, you hear so, yeah, my friend is building cars. You're like, what, is he nuts?
Yeah. You know, I spoke to a guy that's, he does a lot of work with the aerospace business and military contractors, and they are deeply concerned because we have lost the ability to bring people into their companies to build things and make things, because it's just not taught. It's almost frowned upon. Parents look at, oh, okay, if you're going to go in that direction, you're a failure. That said, people graduate with 4-year degrees in whatever degree it is, and they can't get a job anywhere.
Correct.
Because of, you know, various, you know, other forces in play. And until we start to really change our mindset and look at it as, you know what, we need this on our shore. Yes, are we going to ever make toilet brushes again? Maybe not. Probably not. But we can, if we start to value Made in America more and we start to see the value in it, I think that starts to open the doors and you start to create a workforce. But we're talking about, you know, a 2-decade plus.
And at the same time, Patrick, you've got technology passing you. I mean, you have technology making most of the manual labor obsolete, even in China. I mean, they're already going into technology where it's robotics and 3D printing, and you're just not going to need the humans to be able, which I think is even more frightening. Because then we lose it entirely. We don't even know how to fix it. You know, it's like machine learning. We don't even know how they're learning. And it's just they're teaching themselves to do things, and we don't even understand them. That's a problem. We can't lose our intellectual and physical abilities to be able to step in. Otherwise, the world's going to be just a magic show.
You know, that is probably one of the scariest things that we've been, you know, looking at this AI and how technology changes lives and progress and, you know, things that look like progress. What does that do to the human condition? And I think that a lot of times, I mean, we're so conditioned to believe that all progress is a positive thing for human culture. I think of one story you know, when the explorers first came here to the United States and decided to make contact with the natives, eventually 90% of the people died because of the germs that we brought with us. And I often think, would we, knowing that, going back to that time, the progress that we made by making that contact with those natives, if we knew that 90% of them were going to die, would we have made that decision to make the contact, or would we have taken a step back and thought about how to better serve mankind? And I think when we look at technology, we so often just run straight forward thinking any progress is a good thing. But in a lot of cases, there's huge, huge impacts on human life that I think that we need to start thinking about a little bit more. And it's very hard to think on those terms when you're talking about, you know, the bottom line. And
I have to tell you, Patrick, I would love to talk to you about this. I'm very much into technology and AI, ASI, AGI, and I'm telling you, nobody is asking that question. Too few people are asking the question, yeah, we can do it, but should we? And the entire world, I mean, what's happening in South Korea right now, where they're just running headlong into all kinds of things that you should stop and say, wait a minute, this changes everything. But all these people want to be first. And we're not asking the big ethical questions of what does this mean? Because we're talking about alien life forms. They're not going to think like us. It's alien life forms. And those alien life forms will be relentless. They will not deviate from their course. So if we program it to do something, it will do it. Let's say we want new biofuels. Great. If that's what the program says, well, at some point, it may look at humans as a biofuel and break us down. I mean, we just have to be methodical and slow down.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize how quickly when these innovations come along, how quickly they come along. I mean, think about the smartphone. How long has it been since the smartphone has been in our lives? And I still have the first video of a waiter that came and served me at my table on my phone, on the phone that I'm using right now. It wasn't that long ago that the smartphones came along, but when these things happen and when these changes happen, they can happen overnight, and we worry about and we are concerned with bio hazards, right? We know that there's certain kinds of germs and certain kinds of viruses that we do not want cultivated because they will hurt human culture. We have understood that now. We need to start applying that to these AI and these technology type discussions because they could have similar implications. It might be drawn out over 10 or 20 years. And I have a hard time saying this as somebody that considers themselves right of center, that we need to start, thinking about these things because it goes against my capitalist kind of,
sure,
base. But that said, there's real consequences here that I think that as anybody that comes from a right of center thought process, we really need to start opening up our mind and changing our mind on this and really start thinking about it more.
Patrick Kurelci, he is the host of Red Pilled America. He's got a three-part series out now. You can find it on iHeartRadio. This three-part series, American Icon, Manufacturing Coming Back to the United States. Patrick, thank you so much. Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
When a woman gets pregnant, that is not a human being inside of her. It's part of her body. And this is about a woman having full agency and control of her body and making decisions about her body and what is part of her body with medical professionals. Those are the facts, and that is the law of the land.
Listen,
and they can do whatever they want to that baby.
This is about a woman's body.
So they can
maim
the baby.
Listen, you can
They can do whatever they want. They can torture the baby.
You're so desperate. No, listen. I'm just asking questions.
No, you're not. You're asking provocative things that are trying to make people angry about what's done, and that's okay. All I'm saying is, you guys go too far when you pervert the facts. And we have the President of the United States saying that a baby is born at the end of full term, swaddled in a blanket, and then to decide whether or not to execute it.
That's
BS. It divides people. Nobody said it. It's not the law anywhere.
The governor of Virginia said it.
One person said something stupid, and you want to make it something that you can use for advantage. That doesn't help your cause.
Talk to the survivors of abortion. How about Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia? It's certainly not square with your religion. Lots of instances.
I'll tell you that. Go ask a priest if he's okay with you arguing the case that way. And see how he feels
about it. Oh, yeah. I love that.
If you get to the right place
by lying and distorting the facts, no priest is going to like
that. No priest is going to condone lying.
What did I lie about in the way I presented
it? You tell me what state allows you to swaddle a full-term baby and then have a side conversation about whether or not to kill it?
Look,
the conversation was Virginia.
The state of New York allows a baby to be killed up until the moment that baby is born.
I can't take it. I can't take it.
I mean, look.
This is so ridiculous. This is the Virginia governor. That is clearly what he said. Mm-hmm. New York.
No, he was just one guy who said something stupid. Even though we had the representative who was talking specifically about this law. This is what started. This was before Virginia was in another state. Was it Vermont? When she was presenting this in front of assembly and saying, asked specifically those questions and said, yes, it would be legal under my bill.
By the way, I just want you to know, if it's so outrageous, then why wouldn't any Democrat vote for the Born Alive bill? Let's just clear it up.
Yeah,
can't happen.
There you go. Can't happen. Yeah.
So to flip this around. To a moral case, ask a priest if you would be happy.
Yeah, ask a priest about the abortion position and your position on it, Chris. I think you're going to like the. You should do that. You should go in there and ask them about that. Ask the Catholic Church what they think about abortion. You go do that, Chris. Maybe you'd learn something.
The idea of abortion a minute before birth is totally fine. That's what they were arguing.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you say we could swaddle it? Well, okay. All right. So, no. Can't swaddle it. Let's just say that. All right. I'm with you on that. Can't swaddle it. Can you kill it?
A 30 seconds beforehand?
Before you swaddle it?
Mm-hmm. Is that still not a baby then?
Right.
And Santorum's point is really interesting there. Because let's just say we have a weird society. Right. We have people who can do plastic surgery to make themselves look like cats.
Yes.
Right. We have people who
you can pierce everything of your body.
I've seen
people with piercings that are disturbing.
Disturbing. But that's their choice and they get to do that. There are people who are known as cutters who actually physically harm themselves and cut themselves. And we obviously think that's a real problem. But, you know, that's not...
It's their body. They have a right to do that.
And obviously, that's a real thing in our society, though it is an outlier, admittedly. Let's just say we had an individual who decided, you know what is cool to me? I've got a baby growing in me. I'm going to go in there and every day chop off an inch. Just chop off an inch and see what happens. I think it turns me on, let's say this person says. For whatever reason, and you would say, well, that's crazy. No one would do that. I can't imagine someone wanting to do it, but I can't imagine trying to look like a cat through plastic surgery.
Yeah, I can't imagine having somebody put plastic surgery horns on my forehead.
Exactly.
And they do it.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah,
Glenn.
It's their body. They can do whatever they want.
So let's just say someone got excited about torturing this thing that's not a human baby in their belly a month before it was about to be born.
Not torturing it, just cutting it off.
Whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is. They could torture themselves and no one would complain. No one would complain if someone's sadomasochistic and they're going on friggin' Craigslist and inviting people over and paying them to do these things to them. So let's just say they did the same things. We do surgery on babies in the womb. Someone decides to open up a service where they're going to do this. Is it unlikely? Sure. But let's just say, would it be legal under your idea that that's not a human baby? Could you do that? You couldn't do it to a dog. You couldn't do it to a cat. You couldn't do it to even a cow. You couldn't do it to any animal species, but you could do it to that baby in your in the belly.
Well, because if you believe that the baby is not a baby.
Right.
Then you have to allow that because it's whatever the mother wants to do with her body, whether that's pierce herself, make herself look like a cat, or cut an inch off her baby every day just because that's what she wants to do. That's not a baby. Mm-hmm. So to be consistent, you would have to say, yeah, it's perfectly legal. Here's the problem. No one would allow that to be legal.
Right. Why? Why? There's no... The morally consistent view here, of course, is... The absolute 9-month thing, right? Let them up to the last second. Why are you stopping in the middle? If it's a baby at any point, if you're ever admitting it's a baby, then of course you're not going to be able to kill it. That's
right.
Morally reprehensible.
The idea that Chris Cuomo is taking this moral stance, oh, how dare you say we could swaddle a baby and then kill it? Well, 1 minute before birth.
You're fine.
So a 6-minute difference, let's just say it takes 6 minutes.
Sure. To swaddle. There's a process there. The first time you do it as a dad, it's really hard to
do. Mm-hmm. So a 6-minute difference, 20-minute difference, an hour difference. You can kill it. It's absolutely fine. Or it's murder. And how dare you even suggest that?
Gosh, that is an...
It makes no sense.
An unbelievable segment.
This is why Joe Biden, I think, is doing well in the polls. And if he runs to the left, he's going to have real problems.
He's going to lose that.
Because everybody, if you look at everybody who's running, Bernie Sanders, I mean, the guy's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're somebody who says, look, I don't want to burn the whole thing down. I just, you know, I think we can do a better job, you know, and I like the Constitution and free market works for me. You don't want Bernie Sanders. Kamala Harris, you don't know really who she is. She said some crazy things, but she's kind of likable, but I don't know. Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Bob Frank O'Rourke. Okay. You're looking at people who have said crazy things. crazy things.
And saying things on the level of, when you're pregnant, it's not a human baby. Like, yeah. That's such a crazy position that no one actually believes. Because the argument is not really, is it life? We talk about, is it life? Of course it's life. The question is, does that life have any rights? That's what the question is. Does that life have any rights? Do we treat that like it's a slave? Like it's property? Like it's some other thing that we can do whatever we want to for our own pleasure? Is that what we do? And if we do that, that's a decision that people back in the day as of slavery made. They liked that. They liked that argument. They thought it was a great thing. That's just property. Don't worry about what you do to that thing. Well, you know what? It's not just a thing. It should have rights. And that's the argument here. It's not about whether it's life. Everyone on earth knows it is life. Everyone on earth knows it with certainty. The question is, do you give any respect or any rights to it? Do you treat it like it's a human being? And the question is, they're saying, no, it's just property. It's just this thing you can fiddle with however you will.
They've jumped the shark. They've gone to the absurd. They've gone to things that, look, when you were arguing abortion and you would say, look, you don't want your daughter to face this kind of decision. What happens?
Yeah.
Then you have sympathy on your side.
It was a smarter argument by them, although I don't like it, but it was a smarter
yes.
argument. It was more effective.
Right.
Sure.
Because it was reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
It put people in this conundrum that they don't want to think about it.
Right.
Okay, people will think about killing a baby a minute before they're born, and they'll make a decision. There's no reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for that.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.